With your permission, we'd like to talk shop for just a moment.
Because we've got a good racket going, you're not going to be able to touch our own.
Oh, okay, so you've got a racket going.
Cookies are not the only food. I tell that to my children all the time.
It's time for the publisher fight. It's time for the publisher fight.
Here's a man that really appreciates that new England power.
Hi, how's it going? And welcome to the Video Week podcast. My name is Vincent Flood. I'm the editor-in-chief at Video Week. And I can finally say that without having this niggling doubt that I'm also the editor-in-chief of Video Ad News. We are officially Video Week now. We launched the new site this week. You can check us out at videoweek.com. We also had record traffic on the site this week, which was a fantastic start. We broke a large story on Google announcing that it's currently backing Flock to replace third-party cookies. We knew there was a big announcement coming. We didn't expect it to be that. We were thinking that maybe Google were going to postpone their decision on cookies for another year. But it seems like they're currently backing Flock. I think they've left themselves a bit of wriggle room to get out. But if you haven't read that story, you can check out Tim Cross's piece on our site. And we also have a follow-up piece with some industry reaction. We also launched Video Week Research's first ever piece of research. It was a major study that we did on the future of CTV advertising in Europe, looking at six markets. We carried out this research in partnership with PubManic. Thanks to them for all their support. The study has been extremely well received. It's quite thorough and it goes through various different points. And we tried to get the true market sentiment of what's happening in the market right now, because often the marketing messages versus the reality are quite different, and we wanted to get people's fears, concerns, and also to sort of gauge things that they're genuinely excited about and where they see the opportunities are. So you can download that research via the site. This week's guest is Maria Flores Portillo, the general manager for Amobee in EMEA, who I think Amobee, you probably are familiar with them. They're one of the better known ad tech companies. Best known probably for being a DSP, but since the Videology acquisition, they've also been working on sell-side partnerships, one of which we've been very excited about at Video Week, the Planet V launch last year with ITV. Amobee have been helping them power that, and it's been one of the most interesting and innovative approaches to TV trading that we've seen. And yeah, it's I'll be discussing that with Maria. One more thing on the housekeeping side from us. On February the 11th, it's not long away now, we have our NVF roadmap event coming up. This will, we'll be taking a look at what to expect in CTV advertising over the coming year. We have some fantastic speakers. We've got Tom Rogers. Tom is a industry legend, the founder of CNBC. He's also one of the people who first brought cable and broadcast together. And he is easily, far and away, one of the best people I've ever interviewed, one of the industry's finest minds. And we're going to be talking about things like Disney versus Netflix, which of those is likely to have the firepower to last over the long term. We've also got Jason Kint. If you like some passion and a bit of fireworks, we're going to be talking about the antitrust movements against Google and Facebook and what the consequences of those are likely to be for the companies and what the implications are for the wider industry as well. Very excited to have Aki from StreamHub speaking as well. Aki's going to be talking about what broadcasters have been doing in Japan. They've been forming some very interesting alliances. Other issues, let me see, we've got measurement. We're going to be talking about what the gold standard for CTV measurement should look like, why creativity isn't really happening in the way we might have hoped on CTV. And then identity, of course, the big issue for this year, I think, and we're going to have, be having a panel dedicated to the topic at the event. So yeah, tickets are at newvideofrontiers.com. If you are unemployed or furloughed, you are more than welcome. They're free of charge. And like I said, a few people at the last event managed to get some good leads and conversations going. So we really want to include you, and you are not only welcome, but encouraged to attend. Okay, so now I'll pass over to my conversation with Maria. I hope you enjoy. So So, Maria, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Great to have you here at last. So we're a few years into the Singtel acquisition, but I'm particularly interested in Singtel. They're a fascinating company. They're, you know, the big four telcos in Singapore. I know they've got presence in India, Australia, and they've often been one of the companies sort of most interested in the sort of media space on the telco side. There's a school of thought where some people are predicting that telcos are going to be able to play an even stronger role in the ad tech world, you know, particularly post-cookie and post-GDPR, partly due to the data at their disposal, and they've got these massive first-party data sets and first-party relationships. Do you think that they're interested in sort of deepening their involvement beyond ad tech investments? And I say that, you know, against the backdrop of many telcos dipping their toe and then retreating, and then, you know, coming back, realizing that maybe they should be doing something. What's your feeling?
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think things have been brewing for a while, right? We've been speaking about telcos getting more involved in TV in particular for a few years now. And for Singtel in particular, the main reason they acquired Amobee back in the day was precisely to have some technology to help them make better use of their data and extract some more value. In Europe, it's been interesting to watch the last couple of years because, again, unsurprisingly, there is a fragmented approach, I would say. So we've seen operators adopting really different strategies. In France, I think France is a very interesting market, right? Because you can see how some of the operators like SFR and Orange are starting to negotiate or build revenue share models with broadcasters. So a bit more similar perhaps to the philosophy in the US. And that's going to be a very interesting one to watch out next year because it could be a great precedent. Then there's others that are, I think, a bit more focused on simply acquiring the media as opposed to just, you know, taking part in that. And you've seen, like, you know, the likes of Telia in the Nordics acquiring Bonnier. That's one to watch for sure next year to see how they bring both sets of data together. And obviously now they control the media itself. And then there's others like Telefonica who have an incredible wealth of data and also own Movistar, right? They own a TV station. They've been very public for many years now about their stance to never use their user information for advertising purposes, right? And they're still there, right? So they're doing some creative things with aggregated data and so on, but they're still fairly tied by that overarching strategy that was communicated by their leadership to the market. So it'll be, I think, quite interesting to see what models prevail, whether they need to make a move into acquiring media themselves, or they're just going to be, you know, rev sharing with some of the media owners. But I do think they have an incredible set of data, and it would be very beneficial for the industry if that data could be put to use in a way that is obviously protective towards the consumer.
Yeah, and are they at the Amobee level? Have they, you know, what type of acquirer have they been? Are they sort of hands on and interested in what you're doing from it and how it can be applied to their wider organization, or are they more of a hands off owner who sort of leave you to it?
I would say it's more of the latter. So Singtel are a client, essentially, right? They are absolutely using our technology. We have onboarded their data. You know, we use that in our DSP in Asia and so on and so on. So those initial motivations were definitely fulfilled. But outside of that, as a mother company, we are part of an investment group, so to speak, within Singtel. And we're a large part of that portfolio. But they let us be, so to speak. So our headquarters are actually in the US. Singtel is on our board, and they're a good parent, but they give us a fair amount of autonomy.
So you guys have been working with ITV on Planet V. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that ITV have a license to use your product, the Amobee product, exclusively in the UK for TV purposes. Mm-hmm. Could you just describe that relationship and, you know, how you are or aren't working with them?
Yes, yeah, no, absolutely, because I think especially the term exclusive can be confusing. So first of all, ITV had said their strategy years ago, right? They wanted to make their advertising more automated. They wanted to infuse it with the data. They have an amazing data. And for that, they wanted a platform to help them create an end-to-end ecosystem, so to speak. And an ecosystem that could handle the complexity of TV trading rules and their inventory and so on. So back in the day, they actually showed a public interest in purchasing Videology because Videology had been created for TV. They had a very strong and customized product for the UK. So they wanted to control the supply at Tech Chain in-house. During that process, Amobee finally was the one acquiring Videology. And right after that, ITV expressed their interest in have an exclusive license to some of that technology and to customize it to make sure that they could take that vision to market even if they didn't own the technology. So it is an exclusive license in the sense that we can definitely not take it to any of their competitors in the UK. And what they have created with us has been essentially an end-to-end ecosystem that controls the supply side of things. So, you know, ad serving and yield optimization and all of those good things. That also helps them package their inventory. And then that gets pushed into a buy-side platform, which is essentially, you could see that as a white label and customized version of our DSP, right? So they commercialize Planet V themselves to both additional suppliers have been, you know, quite public about that intent to bring more supply into that ecosystem. And also they commercialize the buying portal to their agency clients. So agencies could access the classic DSP behind, right, through a single sign-on and all of that. But it is themselves ripping that part of the platform for the agencies. And in terms of our partnership, is a very, very tight one. Because obviously we are extremely committed to their success in the market, to their strategy, and we will continue to serve, to evolve that platform to, you know, hopefully delight UK agencies with them.
Yeah. So how does it work? I mean, what's it look like? I mean, I know my colleague Tim had a demo the other day and he was very impressed, but how does it differ from what a buyer would typically encounter when they're buying video or CTV in a DSP? How is it different?
Yeah, I would probably describe it as a TV DSP, which is not a category. I know. Yeah. but actually, and of course I would say this, but the product is very impressive. I remember when I first saw it demoed after joining Amobee, I almost teared up because I had been serving broadcasters for a while and I had actually tried to create the exact same thing in a different company. And it didn't work. We didn't have enough cash, but it's very, very slick, right? So from a buyer perspective, it gives you the automation, kind of like this slick workflow that you would expect from a DSP, which is good, right? Because a lot of these sales were happening very manually so far, but it also incorporates a lot of advanced targeting capabilities, and I think the benefits here are twofold. One, because ITV has created this protected ecosystem for themselves, they don't have any qualms about using their first party data. So you can actually use all of the wealth of the first party data to do targeting. And that's fantastic, right? But two, there's also additional targeting options. You can, depending on the optionality that ITV decide to create for a particular buyer, but you can target, you know, day pods, you can target obviously content, lots of different content options, but kind of like, you know, down to targeting a particular actor in a show. So it feels like you're trading TV through a DSP experience. I don't know if that explains it well, but they've really made a huge effort to try to bring all of the TV trading rules into the platform.
Yeah, I think that was a big feature of the Videology platform.
Yeah,
originally was that it was very much built for TV, and that, you know, people used to say that they had no technology, which was absolute nonsense. They most certainly did, and it was very highly regarded in the TV world. But one of the things that it is so deeply embedded in these UK trading rules, and for the UK market, is this something that can be transferred elsewhere to other markets?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, you may not do a clear cast workflow in another market, right? But there's, you know, different types of creative approval workflows that can be embedded into this. And you know, obviously we've doing some rounds, right, with the platform, and whenever any broadcaster sees it, they absolutely love the experience. I think it's the model and how you take that to market that will vary country by country, because ITV have a pretty unique position. They have a huge market share. They've never traded in a programmatic fashion too heavily. So moving their agency clients into this platform was not a big change. It was a big upgrade. I think in the case of other broadcasters in other markets, they will need to change a little bit their go-to-market, because they have been trading through DSPs in a completely different way for a longer period of time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the UK obviously has its own set of market dynamics, but obviously, as you well know, you're a something of a veteran. You're a young veteran of the... veteran has lots well of done. Connotations. Not the polite well way done. Of saying you're an old person. But you know, as far as video and CTV goes, you know, you've been around since the very early stages, particularly on the broadcaster side. And, you know, as you know, there's a very different set of market dynamics as you go from market to market. And what type of programmatic models do you think we'll see emerge across Europe and some of the other markets?
Well, it's quite interesting, because actually there's a lot of consistency, I would say, from the feedback that we're seeing in, you know, from other broadcasters. At the moment, if you look at today, just a snapshot of what broadcasters are doing in Europe, there is a lot more, I would say, you know, traditional programmatic trading. I run a DSP. You can actually see the prices that some broadcasters are selling at. And it's a bit heartbreaking, given the effort and the cost that takes to produce that content. But I think most of them are waking up to, you know, to a decision that to pull back a little bit from those models, right? And we have seen a much, much higher appetite to consolidate and to form alliances. And more interestingly, I think for me, because I love technology, there's been a lot of effort by many, many broadcasters. And again, each country is a little bit different, but to create a very strong data proposition. So I do believe that models such as the one that ITV have created here, with the intention of becoming an ecosystem for TV, a destination for all things TV, right? And that will include addressable, and it will include BVOD and so on, and glue all of that through data. I do believe that we'll see more of that in Europe. Whether they will start with, you know, trading TV teams like ITV, or they will go straight into programmatic teams, it's hard to say. But there's a lot of conversations going on about bringing things together, leveraging this data to fight the digital giants. So it's not going to happen overnight. And I don't think the window of opportunity for broadcasters is limitless either. But they do have great assets. And I do think that if they play their cards well, they have amazing content and amazing data at a point where some of the advantages that the digital ecosystems have will go to a certain extent, because third-party data is not going to be that interesting. Cookies will dissolve, and content is having a bit of a renaissance. So yeah. I don't know if I answer your question about models, but I think we'll see more initiatives quite similar to the one that ITV is trying to initiate over here, and a lot more alliances to bring things together.
Yeah, I agree with you on the pricing thing. I'm often shocked by the low CPMs that, you know, markets like France and Spain, where they are producing, like I say, fantastic content, broadcast quality, but it doesn't seem to be getting the same level of recognition by advertisers. I'm not entirely sure whether it's just the wider economic situation, whether it's a path that they've sort of ended up in some sort of race to the bottom and have, you know, but it doesn't feel like, based on what we know from market research on the effectiveness of TV and when ads are adjacent to, you know, superior content, it seems like advertisers are just getting an extremely good deal in those markets. Do you think there's any chance that they'll be able to get the pricing back up through through programmatic, for example? Is the data one route to doing that?
Yeah, I hope so. I do agree. And I think the reason why some broadcasters are there at those CPMs is a result of a number of factors, right? As you said, it's definitely the economic conditions in some of those markets. Media owners have been in difficult situations, and they had to be slightly short-termist. It's always easy to criticize, right? When you know the person making those
100%.
Decisions.
Yep. Yeah.
But they had to take the money. Let's put it that way. And there's been a lot of pressure, right? I did some reflection in the last decade recently for broadcasters, and it's been a very, very tough 10 years with new entrants, not only for content, but especially for advertising, right? YouTube, Amazon, Facebook, and whatnot. That has created extremely good options for agencies and advertisers to get reach at a very cheap price. And I think if you are in a difficult position financially, you just need to give in a little bit and agree to trade through those platforms. And then your content gets immediately undervalued because it's only about the idea and it's only about the user.
Yeah.
So could they have done a better job at marketing that content and the effectiveness of that content in particular? Probably. But again, I think it's hard to not feel some sympathy for some of the situations that they've been in. So can they have a comeback? I think so. I really think so. Because I think the main advantage of broadcasters is they own TV. TV is the central piece of any media plan. If they find a way, and I think they're finding a way, at least some of them are, if they find a way to provide an ecosystem that helps advertisers look at a media plan more holistically, because they can tie in that linear world with the digital ecosystem, they're in a very good position. And there's a lot of initiatives going on around that. Are they going to be on time? I don't know, obviously, because the digital giants are also trying to get into TV and into TV data. But I think whoever cracks it will land on top. And you can see how some broadcasters are already doing that. Like if you look at RTL, they own SmartClip. They've been, you know, amazing pioneers with HBB TV. The packages they have with data are phenomenal. They've done a joint venture with their competitor in Germany and kicked DV360 out of the market pretty much. So they can definitely put up a fight with the right assets and the right attitude. But you know, these are organizations that may not have all the cash in the world to invest in technology, may not have a political appetite to get together with their competitors and so on. If they can leave all of that aside and find the resources to create these ecosystems, I do think they can have a comeback, but they will need to pull back from, you know, having their inventory in an ecosystem that is powered by a competitor. I think that's the trick. Yeah.
I think, as you know, you'd be speaking to a lot of the people that I would speak to, and you will have the digital people at the sort of head of, in all of these organizations around Europe. They're as smart, they're as savvy, they're as intelligent and forward thinking as anywhere else. But what they often find is that they're involved in this sort of internal political struggle. Often where, you know, linear, for example, because it does still deliver so much revenue and should be recognized, but they're often up against a sort of internal political fight and don't have the kind of clout to make changes and often aren't resourced well enough, whether it's, you know, with their team or investments in technology. And but like I say, I am feeling optimistic that change is afoot. We're going to see some interesting stuff over the next couple of years. So, you know, but on the whole, do you think that they are making it easy enough for agencies to spend with them? I mean, I hear this from agencies all the time that, you know, it's just easy. You know, with Lindsay Clay on the podcast, and, you know, one of the things she sort of mentioned that broadcasters need to be doing is, you know, just small, if you think of situations like, I've got a small 20 grand bit of budget that I still have to spend, where will I do it? Oh, I'll put it into digital because I can jump on a DSP and fire off my campaign immediately, as opposed to a 2-week negotiation process and all the rest of it. Do you think they're doing enough to make it easy enough for agencies? What do sort of the agencies and brands, what are their perceptions of TV?
Yeah, you know? BVOD, and it goes back to my point about, you know, getting together on this. BVOD is difficult, I think, to buy. You can access some of that through DSPs, and that's all good, right? But if you want significant reach, you may need to also do a little bit of a direct buy, and then a little bit of DSP. And that applies to CTV too, right? It's still so incredibly fragmented. And then obviously linear is a completely different angle. So I don't think it's easy. I think it's much easier to buy a YouTube campaign, right? And I think that's what broadcasters should try to not aspire to, because I don't think they should be YouTube, but I think that kind of experience is the experience that any trader will favor 8 days a week, right? So yeah. So that's very important. And if buying, if BVOD campaign is tough, imagine trying to do that internationally, for instance, for a pan-European campaign, or trying to do that across a number of broadcasters. It's just hard, even in the UK, right? You would need to use a number of different platforms. And that's just not going to make things easier for broadcasters. And that was my point about you need to have sufficient reach. You need to have an easy experience. That's exactly what ITV are trying to create. And that's what I know other broadcasters are trying to recreate as well in Europe. They've had a decade of hardship, I would say, but also a decade of learning. And if there's anything they know, is that they need to make it easy. Whether they will succeed at making it easy or not, I don't know. Because obviously that will require some investment. And putting your inventory out there through DSPs is not necessarily in their favor, so they need to come up with a better alternative.
Yeah, I think their competitive instincts are often a barrier to these things as well, where people have viewed each other as competitors, and to some extent they, of course, they still are. You know, it's not like, but I think many are coming around to the view that teaming up is necessary. But I mean, how necessary is it for them to sort of pool their inventory in one place? I mean, this is a long-standing thing in the TV industry where, you know, they've had joint sales houses and made it, you know, provided a single point of access, even if it is it wasn't programmatic and quite slick as digital, but it did provide mass reach through, you know, a single negotiation, which was very efficient in its own way. But yeah, how important is it for them to pool their inventory or to have these, whether it's cooperative sales houses, you know, do they really have to, or is there, you know, the original promise of programmatic would be that you would jump on your DSP, be able to see the full spectrum of inventory out there from a single point of access and be able to optimize your different channels. Hasn't really worked out like that. So, yeah. What do you think the future is when it comes to sort of TV cooperation?
Yeah, I do think it's a necessity. It's a critical path to provide the right level of reach. Fighting this one by one is not going to lead to any positive outcome. They are, and I believe it's exactly what you said, they are definitely starting to rethink cooperation, because I do think they all feel they have a larger common enemy. Not in every country, not in, you know, in every market, obviously. But there are a lot more, and I would say solid conversations going on at the moment in Europe than than in the past, despite some initiatives not having, you know, panned out too successfully, maybe like EBX or others. But I believe there will be a lot more cooperation in the next couple of years, because after that, it will be difficult for them to have a comeback.
Yeah. I'd like to see more consolidation on the content side as well. That's something that I can imagine that conversation is very difficult, where if hypothetically, you know, if ITV and Channel 4 were in a joint app environment, whose content is the most visible, that type of thing. I can see how those conversations would probably be quite difficult to navigate. But I know for me personally as a user, I would end up consuming a lot more of their content, both of their content, if I could view them both in a joint app. I'm really convinced of that. And I think that that's something, I'd really like to see more of, and for it to be worked out somehow. I know they did try before with Project Kangaroo in the UK, and they've tried it in Germany and various other markets before. And regulators have shot it down, but...
Well, you have Salto, right, in France, for instance.
Yes.
And then there's, like, you know, some cute things on the side, like BritBox and so on. So there, you know, there's some efforts. Yeah.
I'm interested to see how that all works out. So for you personally, what one problem complicates your life more than any other?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Such a long list. No, I think that the top of the list actually is, I would say, it's silos, honestly. And I think you already alluded to this before, right? Within broadcasters, you may have the linear team and the digital team. I think they're trying to solve for that. I think there's a lot more initiatives around being able to do, you know, cross-screen planning and bringing those teams together. And you know, lots of broadcasters talk about it as a total TV. But it's also on the agency side, right? I feel that technology is further along than what the industry knows. And that's because it's very, very difficult to break some of those silos, right? So again, example, it is possible today for advertisers in some countries to be able to plan in a very slick fashion across linear TV, and I'm talking linear, and then the rest of more so like IP-based environments. It is possible to optimize across that. But then you go to an agency and an investment team, and they will be like, oh, wait, but I have this like very advanced pivot table that someone built inside, and that's good enough for us to plan CTV. And then you go to their programmatic team, and it's like, oh no, but we use the DSP for this other part of CTV. And then they have a social team and another programmatic team that is not CTV. It's insane. And one of my top pet peeves is inefficiency. And when you see the level of like process fat that exists in all of these organizations is really insane. And I think until you know, advertisers themselves are quite siloed too, right? But until there's not a big push to actually make use of technology properly and break some of these more, you know, internal political silos, and oh, but we have a homegrown tool and it's sort of like working fine, and you know, the advertiser is not really making us more accountable than this. It will be difficult. So it's definitely not, you know, the agency's fault or the advertiser's fault. I think it's just like an industry dynamic. This is how we've been operating for years, and any change takes time. But that is the one thing that is getting in the way, I find, because technology could do a lot better. And I feel that we owe it to consumers as well to have a better experience. So hopefully we can get through those organizational hoops sooner rather than later across the board.
That's something I repeatedly hear about, that within, particularly around agencies, and I think it's partly a reflection of the fact that CTV is new and it hasn't achieved quite, well, it's rapidly achieving scale, but it's not fully on a par with linear TV just yet. And, you know, I think, you know, there's even other teams I could probably have added to your list, as, you know, you get those broad digital teams, you get the TV team, you get the, and everybody, nobody, yeah, the, nobody really owned CTV. I think Group M have done a great job of Finecast and having, you know, I know it's more of a CTV product, you know, but in terms of having that in-house expertise and focus on it, I think that's something other agencies could learn from, I think, in terms of just having that dedicated expertise on a massively emerging area was a very smart strategic move.
Yeah, and they're doing incredibly well, right? So
yeah, but they weren't always, you know. I mean, I think at the beginning it was quite difficult, it's quite challenging, and you know, it's taken them a while to build it out, and they're just finding that as they've evolved and understood how the space is evolving, that they've gained a head start on everyone else. So full credit to them. My final question is another open-ended question. But if you had sort of £10 million or euros, your choice, to invest in a company, or perhaps it could be a sector. Some people like to say a sector. Where would you invest today and why? And you're obviously not allowed to say Amobi or ITV.
No, for sure. I guess it's within the industry. It's hard to pick a company, to be honest. Sadly, I don't think there's one company that I'm extremely excited about at the moment, because there's so much change going on. It's hard to know, you know, who's gonna land in an incredible position. So I think identity, you know, you see the likes of InfoSum, for instance, I really like those guys, getting investments, they're getting a lot of press, and they're doing a decent job, definitely, in solving for a part of the problem. And then there's others that are, you know, trying to adopt different angles. There will be a very interesting race as well around, again, cross-grain identity. And it seems that the standard bodies are not doing a great job. So we'll see what happens with that, and whether OEMs or, you know, even whatever, like online video platforms with the information that they collect can actually play a role into that, because bringing that whole media plan together is going to be, in my opinion, the one thing that could deliver the most value to, again, to consumers and to advertisers and probably to media owners as well. So that's a race I'm watching, but I yet don't have one agency that I'm like, one entity or one company that I would put 10 million against. It's early stages.
Well, Maria, our time is up. And yeah, I just want to say thank you very much. That was, as expected, a hugely insightful conversation. And thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Cheers, and you.